Alive and Kicking with Claire McKenna. This is News Talk.
Yes, you can email the show alive and kicking at newstalk.com, or you'll find me on Twitter and Instagram. Coming up this morning, Meg Matthews rose to prominence as the wife of Noel Gallagher, inspiring one of Oasis' biggest songs, Wonderwall. But today she talks to me about her new mission to remove shame and stigma from the menopause. I'll also be finding out about a new exercise craze, the Huku board, and Brezzy will join me to talk about helping our kids to manage their anger. So what kind of a health and wellness week did I have? Well, lads, it has been a bit of a white knuckle on the Corona coaster this week, hasn't it? It is hard when you have to cancel events, holidays, social events. But when you have to start getting your head around the fact that you can't have your sister over for a cup of tea, it gets pretty tough to take. I know businesses are struggling. So look, hang in there, everyone. All I will say is hopefully if we buckle up and weather the storm, it should mean we won't have to live this restricted for too long. And in other news, one of the courses I have been doing, there's a lot of meditation involved and you have to do it yourself. So it's quite nice I'm being forced to do it because it's making me actually do it. And I've been getting stuck in as much as I can. I do struggle to stay awake once I stop running around and get still, I tend to drop off. But when you are awake, it's actually fascinating the stuff that comes up. So the other day, I was doing this guided meditation. You're being guided around the body. And I got a memory, now a distinct memory of being in New York 2 years ago. I went with two pals. We were all turning 40 and one of them was running the marathon. Not I, I'm afraid. And in my mind's eye, I was right back at this little outdoor market in a square in New York with my pal Irene. We were just picking up prezzies to bring home. And I was absolutely overcome with emotion, reliving the moment. I could see it all. I could feel how I felt. I could nearly smell the smells. And it was just the freedom of it, the joy of it, and how I'd absolutely love to be doing that right now. Now, I'm talking tears coming to my eyes and that heaviness on your chest, as if I'd had that suppressed until I got still. And Irene, my pal I was with, she lives in Galway. I haven't seen her since before March, but we're in touch regularly. And I definitely haven't been feeling anything more than just a bit miffed like the rest of you that I can't meet up with her. So it's not something I've really been pondering on. So I was very surprised to see what was bubbling under the surface, as I say. I shall continue to self-excavate and keep you informed as I see fit. I also loved this week Graham Norton talking to Blind Boy on his podcast. And it's a nice long listen. So if you need something to keep you standing in the kitchen, as I know I now love to do, setting myself up for a week of healthy food, give that a listen. I also loved British Bake Off winner Nadia Hussein on How to Fail with Elizabeth Day. It's an absolute gem. She's just amazing. She throws open everything about her life, from having an arranged marriage to her struggles with anxiety. And that's well worth a listen to. You can email the show aliveandkicking at newstalk.com. Mention the name Meg Matthews and it's hard not to think of the Britpop era when she was Lady of Supernova Heights, living it up in the so-called Primrose Hill set with parties and visits to 10 Downing Street with her then husband Noel Gallagher at the height of Oasis fame. But of course, she is a person in her own right, a print designer and a mum. But Meg felt her happy world turn upside down, leaving her so depressed she didn't leave the house for 3 months. But Meg wasn't suffering from depression. She was going through the menopause and she's on a mission to help others avoid the misinformation she was given, the secrecy and the shame. And I feel she's making the menopause look pretty cool. She's put all her experience and advice into her new book, The New Hot, Taking on the Menopause with Attitude and Style. And she's on the line now. Hello, Meg.
Hello there.
Now, Meg, do you mind the inevitable mention and reference to your now ex-husband? Because I've done it, I've seen it in all the print interviews that you've done. Does it grate on your nerves in any way?
Yes. Yeah, it does.
I'm anyway. So sorry. But
that's
I do think what works with it is the juxtaposition of your life then to now, because that to us, I know, you had your ups and downs with that as well, and you've spoken openly about sobriety and all that now, and how it's not always as cool as it seems. It certainly spoke cool to so many of us. And for some reason, we don't think menopause is cool. And why isn't it? Because you're still the same Meg as you were then. I'm sure you've changed in some ways, but you're still the same Meg. You just have the menopause, but yeah. We don't look at it as cool. And I think that's why people keep bringing it up and bringing it up.
Yeah, I mean, actually, I don't mind it that much because, you know, basically it does sum up a big part of my life, which was a very big part, and it was a very big, glamorous, and it was fun and everything. So it was a big part of my life. So, you know, when I said, yes, it does, it doesn't really. I'm so over that now. It was a long time ago. It's like 20 years ago. So you do get over these things. Well, you should do in 20 years. If you haven't, there's something going wrong. So, with Meg's The New Hot, as you said before, I had a terrible menopause. I knew nothing about it. I'm 54 now, 49. I had this like sort of anxiety, foggy brain, aching joints, tired, lethargic, no oomph in me anymore. I was just a bit like, oh, I just kept going to the doctor crying, going, is this life? And oh, and giving me more, just give me some antidepressants. That's, you know, that's all I was thinking of. Because in my whole world, I'd never heard the word perimenopause. I'd never really heard them say postmenopause. It was something that really was not, I had no knowledge of whatsoever, not even a little bit. The little bit was you didn't have a period and you might have had a hot flush. Now, that's the only two things that I could write next to the word menopause. Now I can write 34 symptoms next to the menopause. And I just was like flabbergasted that there was none of this information out there. I mean, I was so shocked, and I just decided that this was going to be my mission because it's not out there. It should be out there, and I'm going to make it be out there, and I don't want any other woman to have to suffer like me. 18 million women in the UK are going through the menopause today, 33 million in the US. I don't have the statistics for Ireland, which I should have done. Sorry about that, Ireland over there.
No, but it's going to face every woman, as you say.
Every woman in the world is going to go through the menopause. Not every woman is going to have a baby, but every woman is going to go through the menopause. And it also will affect every husband, every dad, every brother, sister, children, partners. It will, you know, it has an effect on everybody. So it's about time that we were vocal and we talked about it, and it was mandatory in the workplace, and it was it was, the information is out there. It's not this taboo and this shame. We should not be ashamed about, you know, this natural progression that our body is going through. And I feel as glamorous, as powerful as ever I was. And I do feel even more empowered because now I really don't give an F about having to be a certain way, being this hat, being that tall, or being that thin, or having that color hair, or having that dress, or da da da. That seemed to eventually, it's gone. And I'm very comfortable in my own skin.
And something you said there about it facing every woman, even though not every woman will have a child. And I think we've come a long way in how we view women in society. We've certainly got a bit of a way to go. But when we look at menopause as being the end of something, that's like we're saying that the only value a woman has is during her childbearing years. And not everybody even has to choose to have a child anymore. So just because that time of your life has ended doesn't mean that you have ended. We need to really flip that completely. This is the beginning.
Yeah, I never say the word the end. I don't even know why it even was ever put out there, the end, because, you know, we look at it, we're probably fertility wise from around 15 then maybe to, like, you know, sort of 40, late, you know, sort of middle 40s. We know that the perfect age to have a child is 32. So we are going to be living a lot longer when our ovaries have stopped working, with being unfertile, which means that's when the estrogen is being made and the yeast and the progesterone is being made. And this is the problem, that the estrogen, one out of two women will suffer osteoporosis. I was one of them. Two out of three women with the British Heart Foundation will suffer strokes and heart attacks, and more than men. And we imagine men 16 pints, fish and chips, pie and chips, 40 cigarettes a day. No, ladies, we are overtaking them in the menopause. Suicide rate is high in the menopause. And now we know that dementia and estrogen is connected, and so is diabetes. So when this estrogen has decided to leave us, and it's leaving us very early on, like, you know, we early perimenopause can last 10 to 15 years. So you're looking in your sort of early 40s. This is when we should be looking at the prevention and should be looking at putting these hormones back in our bodies, so that everything is basically stays strong, our bones don't go brittle, and we end up with broken hips and cracked wrists and all these things. So as well as bringing it up and making people talk about it, it's about making women aware that you're not waiting till you're 58 or you're 59. Like me, diagnosed at 48, and if you look at my Instagram, you'll see that I think of myself as a pretty fit woman. But it's a silent killer. I didn't know I had it.
And what's interesting as well that comes up in the book, it's not that you and your friends didn't seem to know about it, but the GP didn't really seem to know about that you went to. Nobody said this could be your hormones, or let's take a look at that.
That's the other big problem that we're having, is the more up-to-date research that we're getting is that the GPs, a lot of them in our country, in their 7 years of practice, they only get taught 3 hours or a morning only on the menopause. And this talking about the HRT, the synthetic hormone, the one that used to be made from mare's urine, the one that would cause clotting. Now, I take a body identical gel, an estradiol gel, which is just a gel you rub on your leg. It goes straight into your bloodstream. It's not going to be causing any clotting. You have 100 women, and then I took a estrogen progesterone tablet at night. They're both derived from the yam. They're available on the NHS. It only costs the NHS £4, let me know you as well, for this gel. And the amount of money and prevention of all the other things, of pelvic, claps, pelvic floor, heart attack, strokes, dementia, you know, if we can be helping towards all of this, we'll be helping to save the NHS a lot of money and our health. A lot of these things that can happen to us. So basically, it's about what I'm trying to do is talk about the menopause, make it open, make it take the taboo and the shame out of it, but also be giving these younger women the information that they need, that every woman should have. And it's something that I want to lobby with the government. I want, at the age of 40, every woman in the country to receive a letter that will talk about perimenopause in case you're deciding you're wanting to have a baby later. I and my best friend, by the age of 42, she was perimenopausal and had to do loads of IVF. She had no clue. She was just, oh, well, it'll be easy, it'll be fine. The percentages here. So it's affecting everybody and everything. And also in the workplace, we need it to be mandatory. We need HR to be in control. A menopause woman, you know, might need to be having flexible hours, a place where she might need to take a few minutes, because a peaceful place where they can hydrate. All of this needs to be, you know, if you've got a broken leg, they're not going to tell you to walk up the stairs. If you're having a baby, it will sit down, you know, have a ginger biscuit, and we'll look after you, you know. And women who are very high in their careers, like what I was, my daughter was doing her GCSEs. I couldn't even drive the car to take her to school. I had this thing about, I just couldn't even do that. That was worrying me. Everything was overwhelming. And my partner would go off to work and I would just stay indoors dive under the duvet, just put my workout gear on and then set the alarm. And at 4 o'clock when they would come back home from school and work, I would just go, oh yeah, hi. I really don't feel like cooking tonight. Let's get a takeaway. That was it. And it was a sandwich effect because I was worrying about Aeneas, worrying about my father. My mother passed away from osteoporosis. So I watched that for 2 years, which was a really, really, really awful way to see someone go. And I was just like, this is a sandwich effect. And us women, we don't ever really give ourselves too much time. We're always running around, or we feel guilty to her if we go to work, and we feel guilty if we don't go to work, and then we feel guilty if we have a facial, if we don't have a facial. You know, we have to. And the more that we talk about it, the more that we can talk about it with our families, you know, and take all that rubbish about brushing it under the carpet and, you know, she's all dried up and we're all looking like the Golden Girls. Well, I'm definitely not looking like the Golden Girl.
No, Meg, so, you look damn good. You really do. You're listening to Alive and Kicking on News Talk, and I'm talking to Meg Matthews about her book, The New Hot, Taking on the Menopause with Attitude and Style. Do you think it comes down to the fact that for years we have been quite ageist, that so much emphasis is placed on being young and youthful, and that's why people don't hold their hand up and say, I'm going through the menopause, because it feels like, as you say, you're joining the Golden Girls, or you're shouting, hey, I'm old.
Yeah, I'm sure that has a lot to do with it. As we look through many careers, it's had a lot to do with careers. I mean, in acting, if you were like 30, you were then playing someone that was 50. There wasn't much, you know, there wasn't much gap there, was there? I think it's changing a lot now. It's had to change a lot now. In music and stuff, oh, you know, she's too old. I mean, there was a lot of that going around. There always was. But I think after the Me Too, I think after lots of strong women like Sharon Stone being on the front of Allure talking about her menopause, Michelle Obama coming out.
And Meg, when you got the right diagnosis and started with the HRT and made a few other lifestyle tweaks, how soon did you start to feel differently?
Very quick. I got the estradiol gel and I rubbed it on my inner thighs. Within 4 nights, my night sweats had gone. I had the Mirena coil. The Mirena coil got taken out. I was then put on a progesterone. With the progesterone tablet, it helps with endometriosis, stops with the thickening of the womb. You have to be very careful in later life. Then I also took a tester gel. Now, you can only get that privately, but you can also get it on the NHS if you ask your doctor to refer you to a menopause clinic, which there are such things. And there you can be looked after and go through everything with them. And I felt better probably all around probably about 10 days.
Wow. I mean, it's just such a turnaround from being completely overwhelmed with anxiety and depression and not getting out of the bed to being able to just function again and get on with your life.
10 days, and just rubbing a gel on my skin. I couldn't get my head around it. I thought I was going to be doing like pricking, like you do with diabetes, measuring things and putting things in and hormones. That's what I envisioned. Or I just had this big HRT above my head, just said, cancer, cancer, you're going to get cancer. And I was like, oh, that's what was in my head. Oh, you can only take this for 5 years. No, this body identical gel and estrogen progesterone derived from the yam, you can take that till you're 100 years old.
Yeah, there's so much fear and misinformation, as you say, but you blast through all of that. There is no taboo. There is nothing really that isn't discussed in the book. I would highly recommend it. It is called The New Hot, Taking on the Menopause with Attitude and Style.
And you can also go to megsmenopause.com, where she has a product range and an app where you can log your symptoms and get the right advice that you need, because knowledge is power. And as we said, you know, we're coming into our prime in many ways, because especially if you've had kids, your kids are pretty much raised, you're moving on into yourself. We don't need to be held back by fear and shame and these symptoms. So keep going, Meg. You're doing a great job with your platform, and I love talking to you today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Coming up after the break, find out what a hookah board is.
Alive and kicking on News Talk.
So some of the biggest buzzwords in the health and wellness world are mindfulness, exercise and sustainability. And Cathal Sheridan, owner and founder of Hookah Balance, claims to have encompassed all three with his balance boards and other products made here in Donegal. He's on the line from there now. Hello, Cathal. How are you?
Good, Claire. Thanks for having me on. I hope you're well.
How is life up in Donegal? We're all thinking of you in all the border counties.
Yeah, well, I suppose the sun's shining, so that's one thing. We're staying as close as possible to the workshop, and we're not really going out much. But locally, we're doing okay. But yeah, there's the numbers are quite high, so hopefully everyone else can just relax for a few days or a week and let things get back to normal.
And lucky it's one of the most beautiful places in the world, so hopefully people can get themselves on a beach walk to get their heads around what's going on at the minute and clear it a little bit from time to time.
Definitely, yeah. I mean, I passed people at sunrise this morning at the beach. Luckily, I drive past the beach on the way to work, so it's a nice commute. But there was people out this morning quite early, so there's plenty of people making the most of them.
So tell me a little bit then about Hookah, the brand. When did it all begin?
Well, I suppose it started back in 2008 when I was looking for a way of improving my surfing at the time. I was living in Galway and I wasn't getting out as much as I was previously, so I made myself a balance board out of scrap material and noticed a dramatic improvement in my surfing. I shared it with a few friends. They eventually felt the same way after a few weeks, and it kind of became a hobby at that point. I made some for friends while I was working as a cabinet maker at the time. It kind of tipped along for a while. Then the recession came in, I suppose, at the same time. So I used it to fund my degree in industrial design. And that kind of kept me going for 4 years. And then it wasn't until last year that I decided to try and make a business out of it.
And what is a balance board?
So it's in its most basic form, it's a deck that moves independently to it with a fulcrum, so a wooden tube in this case. So we make them all ourselves in Donegal here. We don't use any plastics for the tube or the deck or anything. So the basic idea is once you step onto this product, your core is engaged immediately upon standing on it. So you're awakening your core muscles, you're improving your posture when you step onto it. It's a great aid for injury rehabilitation. It helps reduce back pain and as a result then better posture. And it's great for improving coordination and body awareness.
Because balance is actually a very important skill for us to have, but I don't think we really talk about that enough.
Yeah, it's something we take for granted. And I suppose when we learn to walk, we think we're pretty sorted when it comes to balance. But I think if you're on the sea, or you're on a bike or you're running, you kind of realize that maybe your core or your balance isn't as strong as you thought it was. So this is a great way of getting that core strength up to help increase your balance, your coordination. And it's also quite a mindful exercise once you're on the board itself.
So it looks like, for people who haven't seen it, and you can go online to hookahbalance.com, It looks almost like a seesaw nearly that you're standing on, and you've one foot either side and you're just continually trying to balance. But you do have another version for kids also.
Yeah, so I suppose it's a seesaw, but it's detached from its roller, so it rocks and rolls.
Yeah, so it's even harder.
Yeah, we thought that was too easy, so we brought it up a level. But our children's board is more about, it's a wobble board. I suppose it'll rotate 360 degrees. And we've incorporated a little puzzle into it. So you move, the user would move around a little wooden beach ball around the puzzle. So what that does, it's about developing coordination and balance and spatial awareness in children. And it's also like a fun game, so they don't really realize they're getting a little workout.
Yeah, it's really, really clever. You're listening to Alive and Kicking on News Talk, and I'm talking to Cathal Sheridan about his products at HukuBalance.com. So how has the design differed, and why was sustainability so important to you, Cathal?
So as I said, I worked as an industrial designer for years, and the go-to material in design is generally plastic. It's a cheap material that you can make in vast quantities. So that's great for business, but it's not great for the environment. And some products definitely need to be plastic. If you're in the medical industry or white goods, that's fine. But I looked at what I was making, and yeah, I could have gotten a plastic piece of tube made in China, sent it over. But I just think, at what cost to the environment? You know, if it gets thrown away, it's not going to go anywhere for 1,000 years. Whereas if you keep natural materials, it's going to biodegrade over time. It's also a lot more beautiful to look at. So our main thing was to be to have as little impact on the environment as we possibly could when developing these products. So wood was a very clear choice for us in that regard.
And it's been going really well. You've been shipping these global.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Hong Kong, Hawaii, California, Australia, throughout Europe, throughout Ireland and the UK. It's going very well. This was our first full year in business, 2020, so we were expecting a steady growth in sales. Luckily, we've maintained that growth throughout the pandemic. I think it's a very useful product for someone who wants to work out at home, or if they've got a standing desk in the office. It's something that you can do at home, and you don't, if you can't get to the gym, you can't get out for a run with your friends or whatever it is, this is a good substitute for that.
Well, I think it's really interesting, and it's great that it has continued to soar throughout this crazy, crazy year. For more, you can go to HukuBalance.com. Cathal Sheridan, thank you very much for coming on.
Thanks, Claire.
Coming up after the break, I'll be joined by Brezzy to talk about his third children's book, The Chill Skill.
Alive and Kicking with Claire McKenna. This is News Talk.
We spoke to Niall Breslin from his lockdown lair of Mullingar a few months back and spoke about coping skills, resilience and the joy of the ukulele. And while the country seems to be slipping back into a time resembling that one, unfortunately, Brezzy is moving forward and has just released his third children's book, The Chill Skill, and he joins me in studio now. Hello.
How are you?
I'm good, and I've just been telling you, I read The Chill Skill to my kids last night, and I have to laugh. My son is 9, and while your character was kicking off about the phone, he was like, oh my God, as if he would never behave in that way. And yet the scenarios that you put up in the book are synonymous with every single home and what goes on. But what you deal with is the topic of anger. So why did you choose this one?
Because it's a very normal human response that we don't know much about. And it's an uncomfortable response, I think, especially for kids. You know, if a kid gets angry 10 minutes later, most kids will go, I feel really bad that I got angry, or I said that, or I reacted that way, or I said something mean to mum. And I have my nephew Billy, and he's the same. Like, he's like any child can get, you know, if you don't give them exactly what they want, they can have a bit of a tantrum for a few minutes. But then it's a few minutes later, he's like, I really feel bad that I acted that way. And I think for anger, it's always something we've misunderstood. Anger can be really positive. Anger can be righteous. It can be important. It can make you assertive, stand up for yourself. But anger can also be misdirected. And it is, as an adult, I look at most of the bad, difficult relationships and conflicting relationships that I see in people, and they generally come out of misguided and misdirected anger. Look online. Look on social media for 5 seconds. It's generally just misguided, misdirected anger. People are getting angry at anything and everything. And kids are no different. So I kind of felt that each emotion in the book, the first book was anxiety and fear. Second book was like how jealousy makes you feel. And this book was anger and how you can react and what anger is and how you can better deal with anger and how you can control it. And you can absolutely control many elements of anger. Sometimes you can't. And that's when you use kind of, I'm sorry for the way I behaved. So there's your boundary. So that's kind of what I wanted to do with the book. And there'll be a series of books. But as kids, right, for me as a child, all the way up to where I am now, I was always told to push away uncomfortable emotions. don't deal with them, just dismiss them like a bold child. That is what's causing a lot of our problems. Teaching young people to navigate these emotions and to express them and to understand them is a superpower for them going into the rest of their life. And we need to teach them then because they're uncarved blocks.
So how do we do that? Because I also have a very fiery seven-year-old and she is a firecracker and she will kick off at the drop of a hat and she'll shout and she'll scream and she'll roar. And you feel tied between letting them be themselves because you don't want to dampen down their spirit. So I would often say to her, look, this is great you feel that way and you will stick up for yourself and we need people like you in the world because you might get angry about climate change or you might get angry about litter on the street and you can use that, but you can't be shouting and screaming like that. You know, it's a hard balance to get right.
Yeah, well, the kind of opening quote I put in the note for parents in the book is a Viktor Frankl quote, like, which is not a quote that you're ever going to see at the start of a kid's book. Viktor Frankl, for me, is one of the most important authors of all time. He wrote Man's Search for Meaning, which changed my life. And his quote is, between stimulus and response, there's a space. And in that space is your ability to choose how you want to react. And in that reaction is growth. What does that mean? When someone, I use an example. I was nearly driving up to Dublin a couple of months ago. I use it in the book. And this guy just pulled out in front of me in the bike. And I beat my horn because I was about to hit him. And he just started to foam at the mouth with anger. I mean, it was uncontrollable. It was like, God, this has nothing to do with me beeping a horn. Something's gone wrong in his day. And he told me to pull in the car and he screamed in the window at me. And I every part of my cell body, ego was going to go, no, you were wrong. I wanted to scream at him, but something in my head just paused. I went, something's happened to him today. And I just said, I'm sorry if I scared you. And in that moment, he went, I'm so sorry for shouting at you. I went, no, no worries. Everything's fine. Both of us moved on. Our days weren't ruined by just outrageous levels of anger. Our egos were put to the side. And that was how we responded. And I felt better for it. And I mean, that's not every time. Sometimes, like, somebody does something wrong and you have to be assertive and angry and have that spirit. But often we just get really angry and then we go, oh, God, why did I do that? What purpose has that served only to prove that I was right?
And is that a skill or a muscle that you have to flex? Is that something you have to learn? Because suggesting counting to 10 and breathing before you completely lose your rag sounds all great in theory until you've already just lost your rag and you're thinking, forgot about the chill skill.
Well, that's self-awareness. That's what mindfulness is. That's what we try to teach in mindfulness. People think mindfulness is about listening to whale music, burning incense and floating. It's not. It's about self-awareness, being aware you're acting that way. And if you want to get a little bit into the neuroscience of that, what happens is in our brains is we when we get angry or something happens to make us react, it's our limbic system and that's our fight or flight. That is an amazing alarm system. It is phenomenal. It's kept us alive all this time. That's there if you're about to be hit by a car and you have to get out of the way. There's no time to think. You can't go, I wonder, is that car moving faster than it is? And by the time you make that decision, you're dead. So your brain isn't doing that. And what happens is we're operating out of this limbic system and neuroscientists call it the amygdala hijack. And all of us as adults are operating in that place because we've so much information coming out, so much fear coming at us all the time. And what we want to be doing is the neocortex, which is your rational thinking part, your brain. It's the part of the brain that problem solves. We're not getting there. And when we are, it's already tainted. The information's tainted. So what we're trying to do is get people to pause. And that all happens, I mean, in split seconds. If you can stop when somebody says something derogatory towards you, somebody says something that upsets you, if you can stop for a split second and decide how you want to respond. And the worst thing you can do, if someone sends you an arsey text message, is to respond straight away. Well, you know what? Take 5 minutes. Let yourself calm down. Let the cortisol come out of your body and then respond. And that's what we're trying to teach young people to do, is most of our conflicting relationships that we see in work, with our friends, with our family, are born out of negative reactive kind of expression and behaviours. And that's something that kids do. And kids are meant to be angry. They're meant to express themselves. We're not trying to dampen that down. We're just trying to say, like I say to Billy, my nephew, same thing, like every kid, like technology is deeply addictive. They can't help it. Sometimes you take the thing and there's this tantrum and I'll say, and he goes, I feel really hot and angry. And that's when I got the idea of it's a fire. And that fire is great because it gives you energy, makes you run around and play to have the crack. But sometimes you don't want that fire getting out of control and you need to dampen it down. And that's just simple techniques with kids.
And why is it so important to label feelings? I notice that's discussed a lot in my kids' classroom, knowing what your feelings are, good or bad, and being able to name them. What does that do for us?
If you don't have the language to express how you're feeling, it's very, very frustrating. I look at my own journey as, you know, from 15 to 30 years of age, well, even from 13 to 18, I was dealing with rampant panic disorder. I mean, it was rampant, and I didn't know what it was. I couldn't describe it. I couldn't explain it. I thought it was asthma, and I was tested for asthma, and the doctor told me it was puberty. If I had known what I was dealing with, I could have said to my parents, I think I am dealing with this. There's your language. There's your bridge connection. Your parents now know. You've opened up conversation. We need to be able to, like, how can a child express how they're feeling if they don't know what that feeling is? And that's all we're trying to do. And some people will say to me, you know, you don't want to be talking about this stuff with kids. That's what has us in this mess. That's what has my generation in this mess. Emotion doesn't have to be too heavy. It doesn't have to be too evasive. It is normal to feel angry. It is normal to feel jealous. It is normal to feel anxious and fearful. And it is as much part of the journey as joy, excitement. And I think, you know, the wellness industry is part to blame for this because they're kind of airbrushing out the bad stuff. They're like, oh, just feel positive all the time. If you felt positive all the time, Claire, you would be dead. Your brain wouldn't keep you alive. You're meant to be negative. You're meant to be cautious. That is what. That's why we've got this brilliant brain. That's an alarm system. So I think the wellness industry is part of the kind of just don't worry about the bad stuff.
Yeah, you can't just keep papering over the cracks. No. You're listening to Alive and Kicking on News Talk, and I'm talking to Brezzy, Niall Breslin, about his third children's book, The Chill Skill. You also identify in the book that it's important for parents to show their vulnerability as well. So it's okay to say, I feel angry too. Or you show in the book that the dad has a bit of road rage. The mum gets annoyed because the kid's a bit rude when they first arrive to granny and granddad. Because that's all normal. And I think we can all in our little families get a bit caught up in, as you say, trying to have this picture perfect day every day. And if you do let something slip that you've really messed up and you've really let them down. Whereas if you just say, I felt a bit angry there. And do you know what? I'm sorry. I should have taken a breath. And just talk it out with them. It's really important.
Make it relatable. If you want to influence your children to take up things like mindfulness and becoming more mindful, do it yourself. That is the single best way to do it. Kids are sponges. They feed off energy. If you walk into a room and there's negative energy or there's a fight, kids will feel every inch of that. We know that. We know that through a lot of the science around kind of, you know, children who've had adverse childhood experiences. They pick up everything, every single thing. Their brain is developing at that point in time. Their brain is developing up to the age of 12. And everything cognitively they see around them, they're pulling into their kind of thought patterns and they're thinking about it and they're looking at everything. There's something I could have done 4 years ago and my nephew could say to me, do you remember that? And I'm like, God, how do you remember that? And he's amazing. I bring him for drives, you know, not at the moment because I'm, you know, with my parents. And I bring him from drives and I said, no, you have to talk to me for half an hour. That's the chats. That's the deal. You talk for me. And I had Matt Cooper on one of the days and he was like, he's right, you know. He was listening. I was like, why? What are you doing? Like, and it was, they were talking about something about Brexit. It was just brilliant. And I just thought, like, these kids are just, they know more than we think they know. And they're much tougher than we think they're tough. And also, I think, you know, you said something there about the picture perfect world. The prime example, that's Christmas. The most stressful time for most families in the world is Christmas. Because we're sold these John Lewis ads that Christmas, I mean, like Chris Rea driving home for Christmas. As if he drives out the N4 now on the 23rd of December, I'll see how calm he is on the road. And we create this thing. And then what happens is when it isn't perfect and it isn't stress-free.
And it's just a dinner.
It's just a dinner. We beat ourselves up about it. We're like, oh my God, there's something wrong with our family that we can't have. I don't know anyone in the history of Christmas that's had a stress-free Christmas. So it's just about understanding all these normal things that we experience. And we have Instagram that tell us these perfect worlds. We judge ourselves off the highlight reels of other people's Instagram pages. These are brands. This isn't real life, you know, and we have to teach kids that too. Like the people who, and I think the influencing industry is really powerful. I think it's a great industry. They're brilliant communicators. And we could actually tap into that to help children. But I think the reality is they're brands and we shouldn't be judging like when you're picking up dog crap in the kitchen on the, you know, Monday morning when you wake up and you're kind of going, God, you're looking at Instagram. Well, Jesus, this guy's making us. You know, having a God, they must have discovered a vaccine in Ibiza and making us, they didn't tell us about. Why are they getting some sun? It's raining. I have to pick up this dog, I have to feed the dog. And then you're just, all of a sudden, there's your day. your start of your day that way. Stop judging yourself off other people's brands.
I think sometimes you might not even consciously to see it like that. You might not even be comparing. It's just a kind of a lowness comes in as you catch yourself in the mirror and you're not as done up or doing your workout as somebody else is. But you're right, it's somebody
else's. Self-awareness. Once again, comes back to self-awareness, observing yourself, and you're kind of going, geez, you know what? And right now, I would say to people listening, it's really important to point out that, you know, through that kind of space before the second wave hit, we were kind of telling everyone that's grand. You know, it isn't grand. This is horrible stuff. This is as tough as it gets for a lot of people. Nobody's enjoying this. We really need to say that to people. You know, we're doing this thing where like, oh, it's grand. You know, it's not. This is horrible stuff. Mm. And it's tough stuff. But this is the very definition of resilience. If all you're doing is getting out of bed, feeding your kids, getting them to school, doing your work, watching 3 hours of soaps, and that's all you need to do right now. Don't try and save the world. Don't try and run 5 marathons in feckin' 5 minutes. Don't try to learn 20 new languages. We've just basically hardwired ourselves to be doing that all the time. I gotta do something. I should be doing this. I have to do this. Right now, you just need to survive and get through this.
Yeah. Whatever you're feeling as well is okay. If you're having a good day, great. If you're having a bad day, that's great too. It's all very normal. We're under a serious amount of pressure. How are you handling the anger online? Because as you said, there's a lot of anger about there. And if you post anything, I find, to do with pandemic or anything, everybody's got differing opinions. Everyone's getting really angry. Is it all just coming from fear and we just have to take a step back and accept that?
A lot of it's coming from fear, yeah. And a lot of it's coming from misinformation. A lot of it's coming from, you know, absolute confusion. And what I've started to do with the anger thing, if it's aimed at me, the first thing I do is try to replace that anger for empathy. I wonder what that person's dealing with, that they're speaking in this way, or they're attacking me like this, or they're using this type of language. Sometimes they're just being nasty. 9 times out of 10, there's a reason for that. And even if that's not true, that still preserves my emotional well-being if I react in a different way. This comes back to anger again. If I go, oh my God, I can't believe that guy said it, and I spend the next 3 hours wondering why he said it or arguing with them online. The one thing I'll say about social media is trying to argue with someone on social media is pointless. There's no context in social media. You cannot have a valid argument. And Albert Mehrabian did this amazing research in UCLA. And he said, when I speak to you, even now, you're assigning 7% of meaning to my words. And the other 93% is to my body language and tone of voice. Now, when you go online, you'd assume that 100% of meaning is given to words, but it's actually not. It's still the same. And that 93% turns to two other things. The mental model. So what is your opinion of that person? So whatever Piers Morgan says, if Piers Morgan went online and said, I just saved 1,000 kittens from a burning fire, you'd be like, oh, feckin' Piers Morgan. Because that's our mental model of Piers Morgan. And also the other 93% is our current mood. So if we're in a bad mood at that time, we'll react accordingly. And this is the problem. Many of our social conversations and our big important conversations are now being had online where there is no context. And that's why we're ripping each other apart, because we hear and we see what we want to see. And that's not in every case, but in a lot of cases. And I think social media is where context goes to die. And without context, it's very hard to make valid, full opinions on any given subject, especially really important social ones that we're seeing. I also think social media can be really powerful, but I am very wary of how I process the information I see there. I believe about 40 to 50% of what I read on social media, and I verify it and I teach myself that. So that's the one thing I would say to people. That's where a lot of our anger is coming from. That's misguided anger, because we don't have full context to what the person's saying, and we might be missing the point, and we might just be attacking that person because we already don't like them.
Well, I think we'd all just love to grab coronavirus and have a good shout at that, and we can't. So perhaps we're
that's righteous anger.
People.
That's all. That's righteous anger. Everyone just wants to like lose the plot over it. It's tough stuff. And the last time we've had a global upheaval like this was World War II. And I keep thinking about it. People go, I know it's not the same thing, but
it's global upheaval.
It's global. And can you imagine there was Twitter during World War II?
Be interesting to read back through the tweets, I'd say that. The Chill Scale by Niall Breslin is available now. His podcast is also brilliant, called Where Is My Mind? And if you want to seek some solace from the madness of living in this pandemic, give his Mindful Moments on Spotify a go, where you'll also find the Mindful Moments for Kids too. As ever, Brezzy, keep doing what you're doing, and thank you very much for coming in.
Pleasure, thanks.
So that's it from Alive and Kicking on News Talk for this week. My thanks as ever to my producer, John Fardy, and to Jojo Cordoza on sound. I shall see you next week.